This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the April 26, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today to talk about financial planning with Brian Kurz, fellow seminar presenter, very well spoken and has deep knowledge on financial planning. And as well, he's a certified financial planner. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Bob. Thanks for having me. Great to be back on.
Well, thanks for being kind enough to work it into your busy schedule.
So absolutely.
I guess if I was to call you as a financial planner and I'm on the border of retiring versus not, probably one of my first questions, and you would better know the first questions you get from potential clients would be, what income will I need in retirement? So yeah. How do you answer that one?
Great question. How much time do we have?
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah. We only have an hour.
This is a really important question, actually. There's there's three key components to every retirement plan that I'm looking at to see if they work. The first is the income need, as we'll discuss here. And then our second part's going to be income sources, which are going to cover the income need, and assets, which are going to help bridge the gap between our needs and sources. So, you know, when we're trying to think through what our income need's going to be, I'm usually going to use one of two approaches, or maybe both. The first is looking at my income need as a percentage of my current income, usually on a pre-tax basis. So if I'm making, you know, let's just using an even number, let's say if I'm making 100K today, then I might plan on pre-tax needing 70 to 80% of that. That's what most experts will recommend. I've run a lot of retirement plans with federal employees. A lot of times they do have a lot going into TSP late in their career, going towards taxes and things like that. When I actually look at what those retirement expenses are projected to be, sometimes it is a little bit lower. I'll find between about 55 to 70% of their pre-retirement income is what they would need on a pre-tax basis in retirement. So that's one way that I'll look at it. The second, which may be a little more obvious in thinking about it, is just looking at a budget. Essentially, what do they expect to spend every single month based on what they're spending right now, and then tweaking some things that might get added, some things that might drop off. Or another way, if someone doesn't know, if they have no idea what their budget is now, they have no idea what it's going to be in retirement, then I'm going to start with their net take-home pay. You know, what do we have going into our checking and savings accounts? And if that cash flow is about even right now, that's what I'm going to start on when I look at retirement. And then we start figuring things out like, is the mortgage going to be paid off? Are we going to have other things that get added on? So that kind of gives us the baseline at the beginning of retirement. And then when we start projecting out over our entire retirement, well, we need to build in inflation. That's really the big one, where our costs for goods and services, our total income need, we can plan on that increasing every single year. So it's not necessarily a simple task, but there are a few different ways we can go about it and kind of start to form this basis of what kind of income we might need year over year in retirement.
I would imagine with your clients, they're generally fairly sharp, I'm sure, but do most or somewhere in between really understand their income needs? In other words, they know that they have currently a salary check, they know taxes are withheld, et cetera, and they may have a good idea of what's left after fixed expenses, but I would imagine not all of them do.
Yeah, I mean, I would say a lot aren't sure what it's going to look like. And that's, I think, one of the scary parts when we're getting ready to retire is they're not quite sure what things are going to look like. They know that their income is going to be dropping in most situations, that they're going to need to replace that by pulling money out of TSP and things like that to a certain extent. And that's the scary part. Are we set up okay? Are we going to run out of money at you know, X age if we live long enough and things like that. And that's why the planning is so important, is to help shore up those concerns and make sure that everything is on track.
Are there any unpleasant surprises, I would say, are the norm? In other words, somebody said, well, I didn't know I had to account for that, but I bet you're right. Or do most of the people come in pretty much have it nailed down as to what their fixed expenses are and their variable expenses?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest unknown and the biggest thing that raises eyebrows is going to be how that income need could change, where, you know, I might be running something and just showing a 2% year over year increase in our income needs due to inflation. And then they look at 85 and see how much money that's going to turn into based on what they have today. And they say that's a little scary. I didn't realize how high that's going to be. Hopefully we've gotten some increases on our sources, our FERS annuity and Social Security to keep up with it. Hopefully we've got some earnings on assets. So I think overall, a lot of times once we run the numbers, the people are in pretty good shape in most instances, not all. But I think that's still something that's a little surprising, is to see how big those numbers get down the road.
And if it's not a shock to them, is it ever not a shock, but do they ever step back and go, oh, these are my fixed expenses? In other words, expenses that I have to pay each month, and I have variables, so I'd like to enjoy the money as well. And they add those two up, and then they look at their annuity. Do they ever boil the taxes out of the annuity? I mean, because their annuity might be X dollars, but that's not what they necessarily bring home, or more importantly, you have to build in enough to pay the taxes so you don't write a check at tax time.
Right. Yeah. No, we always want to build in the tax impact. I tend to want to either look at everything on a pre-tax basis. If I'm doing kind of starting as just kind of looking at it as a percentage of our income, I'm doing pre-tax. And the fact is, most of our income sources are going to be taxed on some level. Most federal employees have the majority, if not all, of their TSP in the traditional, which will be taxed as ordinary income when that comes out. We also look at our FERS annuity, Social Security. We're going to be taxed on a good amount of that as well. Or when I'm looking at the year by year in retirement, I like to think of the after-tax numbers. And yeah, what you see is not what you're going to get when you're running that FERS projections. We do need to take out what the tax impact is when we're looking at what we're actually going to have going into our savings account. So that definitely has an impact on the numbers, and we need to account for the taxes.
Do the folks have a tough time evaluating what their income sources are as well as their expense sources? I mean, they would come to you and say, well, this is my income. Do they ever boil out the taxes first and say, here's my annuity, X dollars, here's the money that I'm going to get in Social Security? Not everybody's going to get Social Security if they're under the old system. And the thrift, I probably want to take money out of my thrift last because I want it to grow. There's three balls to juggle in the air. You know, what do you do first and how do you do it? What surprises have you had with regards to their choices to take out of X, Y, or Z?
Yeah, great question. That's one of the biggest questions I'll get, actually, is which investments should I be accessing first? So I typically, when I'm making this decision, I want to look at something that you just hit on, which is the tax exposure. I want to look at what my tax exposure is for each available asset. And then I typically want to start with the ones that are going to have the lowest tax exposure. So for example, my checking, savings accounts, if I have a brokerage account, a non-qualified investment account, where maybe I've got some positions with capital gains and things like that, but under the current tax system, that's still going to be less, and we're still only paying taxes on those gains, as opposed to my TSP and pulling money out of the traditional TSP, where the entire amount has been growing tax deferred, and there'll be a much bigger tax burden when that comes out. Sometimes we're going to pull a little bit out of each account because we're kind of looking down the road at the tax exposure we'll have if we're just pulling out of one up front. But big picture, I want to start with the accounts that have less tax exposure and then work my way to the ones that have greater tax benefits, either growing tax deferred, traditional TSP, or growing tax free if pulled out at the right ages, et cetera, for Roth TSP, Roth IRA, things like that.
So help me with this one. So some assets are best left as the last ones to touch, or best left untouched to a certain date so that they can grow, whereas the ones that maybe don't have the growth potential, those would be the dollars I'd want to use for expenses first. Am I right with that summary?
You are, but there's one other part that kind of determines why they're the ones that don't grow as much. And that comes down to time horizon and risk tolerance, where, the money that we want and need to access first, what did we just talk about? Well, it's going to be checking and savings. So that has the least tax exposure, but it's also invested the most conservatively. So I'm accessing that money first, and I'm not investing it aggressively because I know I'm going to need it first or use it first. Same goes when I'm looking then at, let's say I've got some money in a brokerage account, a non-retirement investment account, and I'm going to maybe have some stocks and bonds in there. And then I've got maybe a Roth IRA that I'm not planning to touch till later. Well, if I'm planning out when I'm going to access this money, that time horizon is therefore impacting how I'm investing, where maybe I'm going to take more risk with the Roth IRA because I know I'm not going to touch it till later. And then I want to take a little less with the brokerage account. So that is going to generally help the returns to fall in line, where I'm going to have lower returns on the money I'm accessing sooner because I've been taking less risk with it.
Well, you just really hit on something. And Andrew, if we could maybe do the first break quicker, let's come back and talk about, boots on the ground experience with people saying, yeah, I never thought of that, or no, this is the way I want to do it. So let's listen to WEPA, the sponsor of the show. And when they're done, we'll be back.
Over 46,000 feds choose WEPA to be there for their life's biggest moments. Group term life insurance is a smart option if you're looking for coverage that'll help meet your changing needs. At WEPA, eligible employees can apply for up to $1.5 million in life insurance regardless of salary. We also offer other coverage options such as group short-term disability insurance or a chronic illness rider. WEPA has been serving civilian federal employees for over 75 years. Get life insurance on your terms. Visit waepa.org for more information.
WEPA helps provide coverage today that will protect your tomorrow. Group term life insurance coverage is important to have while building your future. Whether you're saving to buy your first home, starting your first federal job, or beginning a family, establish your WEPA policy now, and you can carry it with you into retirement. WEPA has been ensuring the future of civilian federal employees for more than 75 years. Find coverage that fits your future by visiting waepa.org today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here, April 26, 2021, talking about financial planning with Brian Kurz. Brian is a certified financial planner, a participant in the seminars teaching, of course, financial planning. And we were talking about income needs and retirement and the like. So I guess the question is, did we cover all the bases?
Well, we've gotten into a lot of it. So as I was mentioning, the first, first key component is figuring out our income need. And this is really important. So we're going to go into retirement with an idea of this, but this is fluid. We need to look at our expenses early in retirement as our life changes. Perhaps we have health issues that come up or things like that. We need to constantly be monitoring that income need. When I run a successful retirement plan and projections for someone, one of the things that I'm usually pointing out as far as what could go wrong, if that income need winds up being a lot higher than expected, that's a wrinkle. So that's a really important one. And that's something that can be a little volatile. The second component we didn't get into too much, and that's evaluating our income sources. So whether it's CSRS or FERS annuity, for FERS annuity, and we're also looking at Social Security, that base, I'd say, is a little more steady. It's an important part of the planning process. When we're looking at, do I want to retire at 60, 62, 65, I'm generally looking at some different potential annuity payments. When I'm looking at when I start Social Security, is it early? Is it normal? That's going to impact those income sources. But then once I know what I'm going to likely lock in, that's more steady. I have a good idea what that base is going to be. Is there going to be something else? Am I going to be purchasing a TSP annuity? Do I have any other pension, rental income, things like that? I can add those in, and that's giving me my base. So I know here's what I think my needs going to be. Here's what my sources are going to be. And then the big question becomes, what's the gap? What is the potential gap between what I'm going to need and what I'm going to have coming in? If you're in a situation where your income sources will cover your income need, then that is great. That's fantastic. And that's not realistic for a lot of us to reach that level, but that would certainly be nice. And it would allow us to essentially treat our TSP and our other assets as one big emergency fund. But what's more realistic is that we are going to be dependent on withdrawals from TSP and other assets to bridge that gap. So then the question becomes, how reliant are we on these assets? Are we looking at TSP withdrawals and withdrawals from other assets to cover 70% of our monthly income need? Are we looking at it only covering 10%? And that certainly shows us how important it is to make sure those investments are allocated in the right way so that we can have that income coming out when we need it.
So when you look at that individual, let's say that they're retiring or they're planning for a retirement in their late mid-career and the like, but maybe they weren't so good putting money aside in the early parts of their career, mainly because maybe they couldn't, their income needs were greater than their income source. Is there a way to catch up and then pull back, or do you say, okay, this is the plan and we're going to stay with this plan till forever? Is there kind of like, okay, once we meet a certain goal, then we can go out and buy the car we shouldn't have bought earlier?
Yeah. So great question. I think cash flow planning is really important at every stage. So you can be early career, you can be late career, you can be early retirement or late retirement. It's still important to be looking at our cash flow. Essentially, where is the money going? What am I spending on? Hopefully while I'm working, those should definitely be the years where I'm netting positive cash flow when I'm getting money into TSP, into savings. If I'm not doing that, then I need to take a hard look at what I'm spending my money on and what tweaks can be made. The easiest way to improve cash flow day to day is by cutting expenses. The second way is to increase what's coming in. Easier said than done, but getting a promotion, having a second job, leaving the government, doing some consulting work. Those are all ways that we can increase inflows. And then the third option, if things don't go so well, that we might just wind up working longer. We're going to increase our inflows, but we're going to do it by retiring at 65 instead of 62 or something like that and creating the additional cash flow, which if we want to keep working, great, but I'd rather do it because I want to rather than because I have to.
Okay, we've got two individuals sending in questions this week. Let me do the second one is a little bit more lengthy, but let me do this one. So when should one access savings bonds? Should the savings bonds be used for liquid emergencies or long-term care? What are the taxes on the federal and state level? I'll answer that one. I just give tax rates. I won't necessarily go beyond that, but good question. When should I access my savings or savings bonds? Should the savings bonds be used for liquid emergencies or long-term care?
Yep. Good question. So savings bonds are generally going to be pretty liquid, and they're also pretty low risk. So I'm going to put them near the front of the line from a distribution plan standpoint. So I think using them for liquid emergencies is completely fine. I think using it for long-term care expenses certainly works as well. It's not in the same ballpark as just having money in checking, but it's not too far off. A lot less volatility than money I've got in the stock market. So I'm going to keep it pretty high up on the list. And then as you may get into, the tax impact's really going to depend where we live and exactly what kind of savings bond we're dealing with.
Okay, the second question, by the way, folks, these people that ask questions are or were federal employees, definitely federal retirees. They ask good questions, and I think that's given by the first one. Here's the second question. Could you ask your guest about using a bucket approach for a retirement income? Does your guest recommend using several buckets filled with investments to provide short-term, medium-term, and long-term income needs, or using one bucket for all investments where the retiree can pull all their retirement income? That's a long-winded question. I'm sure you got it, but just in case you don't, should I do it and ask it again?
I think I got it. And that is a really good question, essentially looking at, do we want multiple buckets? Maybe this is our short-term bucket we're going to access early in retirement, and then we've got our mid and our late, and kind of separating the assets based on that. This, you could apply this in a couple different ways. I don't know that we necessarily need separate accounts as separate buckets per se. Let's actually use TSP as an example. When I'm going through on a seminar, the life cycle fund options, sometimes I'll have someone ask, should I put all my money in the 2040 fund when I'm going to retire? Or should I maybe put some in 2040, some in 2050, some in 2060 as kind of when I'm planning to access it, or something like that? I think both approaches actually work. Here's kind of pros and cons to each. If you're using one bucket, it's very clear how much risk you're taking. And let's say if I'm managing an account for someone and I've got one IRA account, I'm essentially using one bucket, but then within that account, I'm likely to have some low risk investments, some short duration bonds and things like that. And then I'm going to have some more volatile stocks. And we're going to look at when we withdraw money, you know, reducing risk along the way as we're pulling that out. So I'm kind of managing it as if we have buckets within one account, but I'm still just using one account or one bucket per set. So I think as long as the overall risk tolerance and time horizon and that allocation's correct, having one investment, so to speak, is fine. But on the other hand, you know, let's say within TSP, if you're using multiple funds, 2040, 2050, 2060, it does help in that you're kind of allocating some of this money to be managed more aggressively than others. But the question then becomes, how much risk are you actually taking? If you've got some of your money here, some there, what is your total amount of stock exposure and total amount in fixed investments? And we don't know. You don't know unless you actually do some calculations. Okay, well, this portion is 50% stocks, this portion is 30%, and then figure it out from there. And if you do that scenario, 2040, 2050, 2060, sometimes it works out the same as if we were just in the 2050, somewhere in the middle. So I think it can go both ways. I don't think there's anything wrong with either one. But I think if I'm using one bucket, I want to be managing it based on the fact that some of that money will be there a long time. And if I'm using multiple buckets, then I've separated it out from a management standpoint, but I still want to be aware of my overall risk and overall allocation. And those are just the things I want to keep in mind for either system, but they both work.
Okay, they both work, but when you explain each, is there a percentage of the new clients or the clients that would go one way versus another? Words of these two options, if you will, which is the more often elected?
So, if I'm managing an account with someone and it's that kind of a client, where I'm typically going to have one account and I'm just looking at all the components within it. But when I look at TSP statements for someone who hasn't been working with me or an advisor, it's almost 50-50, where I'll see a lot that, again, it's in one life cycle fund versus that person that has split between a couple. I guess I'm going to lean a little bit more towards the one bucket approach, but there's definitely people that have separated out. Again, I think the best example of that really is, you know, do we use multiple life cycle funds or just use one? And again, a lot of times if you were using one, you'd just be splitting the difference between the multiple ones you're using. They're both going to be okay.
All righty. And people come to you because they feel maybe uneasy about electing one way versus another. But let's say somebody takes one of these two and they're very happy, but then they, for whatever reason, feel that maybe we'll switch into the other one. Do you have people stay the course, or do you have people that maybe move in and out of the course?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about the investment allocation, we definitely want to stay the course long term, whatever allocation makes sense for us based on time horizon and risk tolerance. I'll see a lot of statements where people haven't rebalanced, they haven't looked at things in a while. So again, there's a couple parts to this. There's rebalancing over time as needed to make sure we stay on course just based on investment performance. And then there's the whole market timing side of things where people are pulling out and trying to get back in just based on a lot on emotions and where what they're comfortable with right now. And that part I really want to be careful with, because a lot of times those emotional decisions will lead us in the wrong direction.
Okay. And then the take home, if you will, the taxes. Of course, I'm a tax accountant type. But I find that oftentimes people just really don't realize how much the tax rate is, because everybody's going to be in a certain tax rate one way or another. It's based on their income. I guess the FERS retiree, you got three sources, so you might use two and a third when you need it. But it's probably not uncommon to see that between a federal and a state rate of, say, 5-6 percent, that gets close to a 30% tax rate, not on all income, but on the top layer. And when you tell somebody that, they don't like hearing that. But if they mix it together with the first two rates are lower. So when somebody says, well, I'm in a 30-some percent tax rate, but that's on a percentage of the income, it's not all the income, and then they feel a little bit better, because when they look at X percent of, on the entire amount, it's a whole lot more than what the taxes are going to really be. So I found that to be comforting when you explain to them that it isn't as bad as it may be. How's that been with you?
Yeah, definitely. You've got a blended tax system. You're not just paying the highest rate on all the withdrawals. However, one of the things that I'm looking at a lot with clients is how much are we pulling out of TSP, out of an IRA? And that is kind of the last income. You know, we know what we're going to have in terms of our other income sources in retirement, but if we pull out an extra 20K at the end of the year, well, that's on top of everything else. So kind of where were we tax-wise before that happened? That is something that can be a little bit of a wake-up call overall, is how much we might need to pull out of retirement accounts and what the taxes would be. Either one scenario, it's just we need it to live off of, and we need to look at what the tax exposure is and what we're going to net out as a result. And then the second is with required minimum distributions. And if things are going well and we are for the most part living off of those income sources like FERS annuity, Social Security, then when we hit RMDs, then we might have to pull out more than we want to. And that's going to create a big tax bill associated with it. And that can be a reason the later in one's career we get, where we realize how big that RMD number may be, that we wind up realizing, wow, I wish I had some more Roth assets that I could put in a Roth IRA. And then we're facing this decision of, do we get the tax break now versus later? But we don't know for sure, first off, what our tax brackets are going to look like in retirement. You know, they could definitely be different 10, 15, 20 years down the road. And then second, how much of our retirement withdrawals are going to be taxable? So it definitely all factors in on the planning side.
Yeah, that me again. I don't do financial planning, and I don't preach the taxes. I can talk about them, but when you tell somebody, okay, these are the taxes, where'd you get that number? So you know, taxes kind of like there's a deep end of the pool, and you don't dive in the deep end, but you do jump into the lower end. But all of a sudden, you could be pushed with a wave into the deeper end. The deeper end meaning, the more you make, the chances are you're going to go into a higher, not a disgustingly higher, but a higher tax bracket. And if you're in a state with a state income tax, you got that as well. And I find people just don't warm up to that comment, but they at least listen.
Yeah. When I'm looking at how to plan for the unexpected, that's one of the factors we'll look at is, again, what if tax rates wind up different? And it said it can come back on the contribution side, where the later in one's career we get, the higher our tax bracket, it usually starts to shift in terms of making more sense to just get that deduction up front with TSP contributions. But then we start thinking about the back end and how nice it would be to have some tax-free money on the Roth side. And it definitely weighs in, where we don't know what taxes will look like, and kind of diversifying our tax exposure by having both traditional and Roth is certainly nice to help protect us for one of these, you know, what could be unexpected in terms of exactly what our tax rate will be.
Okay, there's another question that I think hits right what we're talking about. I just want to protect my assets and receive a 4 or 5% return. Would you change anything on the income fund if anointed TSP chief?
Great question. First thing, yeah, as far as targeting a rate of return, we can do it, but I want to be careful with it. And I think it can be difficult. The fact is, we know the stock market can be very volatile in terms of the range of outcomes in our returns. Even when we look at returns in our bond funds and you carry those into something like the G fund or other fixed accounts, well, that's going to be somewhat tied to interest rates and things like that. So it's definitely tough to just put a number on it and set an allocation to meet that. I'm much more prone to figuring out time horizon, risk tolerance, what is the appropriate investment allocation or amount of risk to take from there. And then the part that does kind of apply here, if we want to protect assets, is do we need that much risk, where you can reach a situation where you have the ability to take more risk, but we don't need to. So why would we? And so then it's just a decision is, should we scale back our risk a little bit as a result? As far as the L income fund is concerned, it has actually undergone some changes for a long time. It was 20% stock based, 80% in fixed G&F, fixed income as in bonds and cash. They essentially decided, going on about 2 years now, I think, that they maybe should increase that risk a little bit. They should go to about 30% in stocks, but they didn't want to just go in overnight and dump 10% of that money in the market. You've got a lot of retired federal employees with money there. So they're going to do it over a 10-year window. So we're actually in the process of that change right now. And I think it's about 23, 24% stock, something like that. The fact is, the TSP Investment Board, and this goes in line for all of our life cycle funds, they don't know what your withdrawal needs are. They don't know what your time horizon is. So if I'm in the L income, they're essentially saying that you need the money now, that you're looking for income, and this is the shortest time horizon of all the available funds. So all the other funds are channeling into it. So if I were truly dealing with money that I'm going to be spending in the next 6 months to a year, I would probably have zero stock exposure. But as an L income threshold, with the thinking being that not every dime in the TSP is getting spent in the next year for people in this fund, I think just going conservative in that 20, 30% stock range makes sense. So I don't know that I would make a lot of big changes to it. They are pretty heavy on the G fund compared to the F. I'm definitely a fan with longer time horizons of having some exposure in the F fund compared to the G, but I think what they're doing makes sense for the most part for the objective of that fund. And again, you just want to keep in mind, they don't know your time horizon. So you'll see all of the funds, 2030, 2040, that stock exposure falls off a cliff those last 5 years as it gets funneled into the L income, because they just don't know how long you're planning to then leave the money there.
Very good, and very good time to take a break. Andrew says yes, and so let's take a break and listen to what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to the final leg of today's show. We're here with Brian Kurse. Brian is a certified financial planner, as well an NITP speaker, imagine, on financial planning. And he's imparting great wisdom with us this morning. All righty, got a question or two yet to be asked. So how about this? When would it make sense, due to pandemic, to increase the emergency fund from 6 months to a year or a year and a half?
Yeah, another great question. I think it depends on your situation. The fact is, some of us and our income sources are more reliable than others. I think if you're a retired federal employee and you've got primarily living off of your FERS annuity and Social Security, I think those income sources are going to continue to be stable. So income-wise, I'm not too worried about that dropping. Could my expenses go up, whether health-related expenses due to COVID or anything else? Yes, absolutely. So I think I want to increase my emergency fund some, but I'm still thinking I'm fairly stable. Versus, you know, let's say that I've got a job that potentially, you know, we're hopefully, you know, making progress in the right direction right now. You know, I think we are in a lot of ways, but am I potentially in a job where I could lose my income, something like that? And that's much more volatile. I could see expenses go up and income go down, in which case I'm really going to be concerned about what I've got liquid. So that plays a big role in it. I always want to think through, talk about planning for the unexpected. What would I access in worst case scenarios? So my emergency fund, this is usually money in checking and savings that I'm going to strive for 6 months plus to have. But if I did go through that, what are my other options? So do I have maybe money in a brokerage account that I could access and it's not the end of the world, even though I don't want to? If I'm still working, do I have the ability to do a TSP loan where it's not a financial hardship withdrawal? I'm not getting the taxes and penalties. I'd rather not do it, but if I needed it to get by, maybe I've got something like a home equity line of credit that's low rate. And again, these are options that I could access, and it wouldn't be ideal, but it wouldn't be the end of the world either. So if I'm deciding on keeping this money invested as I should versus maybe liquidating it just to be safe, I do want to kind of try to weigh all those options, as opposed to someone, and let's say they are at risk of losing income, they don't have those other investments to easily access, and they're likely to look at needing to charge up a credit card at high interest rate or things like that. That scenario I would be much more concerned with, and I would be trying to maybe take more action now to increase that emergency fund. So I think it's kind of complicated when you get down into it, and you really need to look at the core details to your situation.
All right, let's take a look at somebody younger, if you will, taking a look at potentially retiring, or they're going to retire. And let's say they're 55-ish. And they've done okay with regards to saving and investing, but they're not necessarily totally confident. And maybe after you looking at the numbers, you know they shouldn't be real confident that this would take them to the promised land of never having to work again. So again, somebody looking at 55 or so of retirement. Have you ever found that they'll go, gee, I'll stay on the job two or three more years? Or do they say, I'll get a new job outside of the federal sector, and I'll live off of the others? What choice do they make if you have people like that?
I do. That's a lot of the clients I work with are pre-retirement, and they're kind of deciding when they can retire. And am I going to keep working for the government, retire outright, or retire from the government but go and do something else? When we're evaluating that decision to go somewhere else, we need to try to estimate what kind of income we would get from that other source. We need to look at what the pension income would be. You know, if I'm taking my first annuity at this age versus if I'm deferring it, how big of a difference am I looking at? I may not know going in, but what kind of retirement benefits am I going to get in terms of, am I going to have a retirement plan to contribute to if I go to that other job and I'm now not putting money in to TSP, and if I was first getting a match and things like that. So there's a lot of variables to consider, but we can run projections for both. In terms of whether I'm just going to retire outright now or keep working, that comes back to the retirement projections. The best way to do it, and what I prefer to do with someone, is to run a full detailed retirement plan where we're looking at every single year what the income need is, what our sources would be, earnings on assets, and then how our assets hold up if we're going to run out of money. If you haven't gotten around to that, you can do a decent amount of it yourself to get started just by going on tsp.gov. Scroll down to their calculators. The first thing that I recommend for someone if they're just starting out with the federal government, or if you're getting ready to retire, is I want to look at the how much will my savings grow calculator. Plug in your TSP balance, plug in what you may contribute to it, run it for different rates of return. One of the most important parts is looking at maybe here's what I think my TSP will earn, but what if my rate of return is something else? What would it look like in that scenario? And then we can get an idea of what that TSP may be worth when we'd retire. We can turn right around, take that value, run it as if we are now 65 or whatever that retirement age is, and we can look at, there's another calculator on there, installment and annuity calculator, and look at what our withdrawals would be if we're going to pick X amount of dollars per month, if we're going to use the life expectancy payment, and turn around and start to get an idea of what we could build up in our retirement account and then what it would turn into. And I said that'll help you just to get some framework in your mind what things would look like if you haven't gotten around to running a more detailed plan yet.
Let's say you met somebody early on in early 50s, 55, 56, and they are going to leave federal service. And you say, okay, here are the different buckets, and this should be fine. Now, you can't say this is going to be fine for the rest of your life, which is the genesis of this question. They come back 5 years, 8 years later for whatever checkup, or 10 years later, and you think to yourself, I think these folks have a decent life expectancy and maybe a little plus life expectancy. How do you get them to get the message and change their investment profile? Is that hard?
Well, I think first off, and if they're working with me, we're already planning from the beginning to possibly live longer. You know, I'll tell people, based on Social Security statistics, if you make it to 65, your expected life expectancy 84 or 86 and change. When we're doing retirement planning, those are not the ages we want to plan on. What I'm generally most concerned with is, what if I do make it to 90 or 95 or 100? I want to be prepared for that up front. So I've hopefully at least considered it, but things can definitely change. One of the big ones being income need, where maybe we went into retirement thinking we were going to need X amount a year or per month. And then in reality, we're a few years in and it turns out we're spending a lot more. And then we revise the projections and they don't look as good. We definitely need to make tweaks along the way. So if that's the situation, then it's likely going to be figuring out how to revise that income need back down, or perhaps changing where we're living and the cost associated with it. But we want to see it coming. We don't just want to suddenly be 85 and we've run out of money. We want to continue to run projections every year as we're in retirement so that we can get well ahead of any of those tweaks we need to make. Which I'll tell people, if we run a retirement plan and it looks really good right now, this doesn't mean that you never have to review this again. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of variables, and we want to continue to make sure that we're staying on this path by analyzing this each year.
Yeah, I like what you just said, and there could be external issues. The individual made their plan. They live by the plan. All the goals have been met and we're within that, and then up pops something where they have to take some of that net worth and help a child, relative, or whatever, and a chunk goes out. But that then changes the game plan, if you will, for the individual, doesn't it? And how do they adjust to that?
It does. So, again, we may have planned for some of those unexpected expenses up front in terms of here's what things look like. But if we do have some kind of event that happens or a lower rate of return or a long-term care bill or something else, as you just mentioned, expenses for children, how would that impact things? So it's hopefully something we've still considered or looked at, but there's always the possibility that it's more than we looked at or that it's another scenario we didn't consider. And you really just got to look at that situation and be able to adapt in that moment to planning moving forward. You know, we can't ever change what's happened in the past. Same goes when we're investing. Someone wants to hold that investment till they get back to even or something like that. That's all a sunk cost. We don't want to worry about the past. We just want to look at what do we need from this point moving forward? What is the overall situation and what are the best things we can do? And again, it may be something where we need to limit expenses or we need to tweak the investment allocation based on the parameters that we're now dealing with.
Okay, not to belabor this, but not this spendthrift client, but the client comes in after a while and says, you know, I want to take more out of the thrift than what we had budgeted because I want to do this before, you know, I become ill. My longevity factor is at issue based on mothers, brothers, and sisters. How flexible are people when they have an issue that they didn't plan on and they come to see you? And how do you shift then the investments to take care on a longer situation?
Great question. So the investments should always be managed based on our risk tolerance and time horizon. And if the situation changes and the time horizon has sped up, then we're likely going to be looking at reducing risk. And we just need to figure out how much and the best way to do that. When we're looking at, you know, how reliant we're going to be on our assets and some of these things that can happen, this person that comes in and they want to take more out, is it okay or not? I want to be focused on what percentage of what percentage or withdrawal rate I'm pulling out, where I'll have, and this is kind of goes back to pre-retirement, people asking, how much should I have in the TSP? Is a 500K enough? Is a million enough? Is 2 million enough? What's the magic number? Everyone wants to know what the magic number is. And there isn't one because I can have someone with 2 million in their TSP, but if they have an expensive lifestyle, if they're pulling out 200K a year, you know, that's a 10% withdrawal rate. And I can be pretty certain that that person's going to run out of money in most situations in retirement. On the other hand, if I have someone living off of their income sources, they're higher than their income needs, then they may have a pretty small TSP account, but they may be just fine if they can avoid some really large unplanned expenses. So it's not so much the total number as the withdrawal rate. As a starting point, most experts recommend somewhere around 4% inflation adjusted. Is something that should be able to last us 30 years with inflation increases along the line. Doesn't mean that that's guaranteed to work no matter what, but I am going to be looking at what that withdrawal rate is. When I start retirement and then at any tweaks along the way, obviously we can pull out higher percentages as we get older and we've got shorter remaining life expectancy, but how much am I pulling out? That person wants to make a change and they want to pull more money out. Well, what kind of rate are we switching to and how does that change the outlook? If it's something where, okay, we can do it, but you're projected to now run out of money by the time you're 82, then it's probably not something we want to do and we need to make other changes. So for any situations like that, we really just got to run the numbers and see how it impacts the long-term outlook.
You know, in my existence, I don't do anything near with what you do, but I'm a tax type, and sometimes I have to suggest doing this, that, or another thing, and sometimes people get awfully mad. Sometimes they get so mad they leave, and some of them come back years later and they go, you know, you were right, I just didn't want to listen to it. What do you say about condition today? So let's now talk about finances rather than taxes, and the same thing. well, you have to set so much aside, and the person begrudgingly did it, and then as soon as you weren't looking, they reverted back to the spending habits. How do you get through? They're nice people, but they can't help themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly common to budget or to plan on expenses. And then unfortunately, we were too optimistic and our expenses wind up higher. And I said, this comes back to cash flow planning and budgeting, but it's, I always tell people, it's one thing to outline what you think you're going to spend, and it's another to look at what you're actually spending. So I do want that projection and reality to meet as much as possible. And sometimes I have to be realistic about what's going on. And it may cause us to take a hard look in the mirror and need to make some changes, both in terms of spending habits and perhaps in terms of projections and how we're allocating, where I just want to be aware. And that's what I'm assisting people to do, is to see the long-term outlook. And then they have a really a choice in terms of either limiting those expenses if needed or making other tweaks or adjustments in order to make sure that this retirement plan stays on track.
Okay, Brian, with all this good information, I am sure people want to know more. How would somebody get in touch with you if they so desired?
Yeah, they could reach out to me through my website, www.briankurrus.com, and that's BRIANKURRUS. They could also reach me by email at bcurris@sfpfinancial.com or by phone at 703-287-7139.
So final thoughts?
Final thoughts, big picture, is I just want to try to gauge what my income needs going to be, review how well my income sources are going to meet that, and then look at when I'm going to rely on my assets each year as a result. And I don't want that withdrawal rate out of my assets to be more than about 4% inflation adjusted. And I said, running a detailed retirement plan will give us the best analysis, but that's how I want to be thinking through the core concepts.
Okay. The core concepts have been spoken. Thank you very much. All the people that wanted to be educated are educated. And we'll have another group next time you come in. Good to talk
to
you.
Great. Thanks for having me, Bob.
Thanks for coming in.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.